This is Beer Here, the weekly podcast and blog on beer at WFMU.org.
And at beerhere.blogspot.com.
So what do we have on tap this week, BR?
This week we speak with Chris and Chris, two-thirds of the Wandering Star Brewery located in Western Mass. And unfortunately we couldn't have the third member, Alex Hall, join us, but we'll catch up with him another time. On this week's episode of Beer Here, we're talking to Chris and Chris. Chris Post and Chris Kuzmi from Wandering Star Brewery in Massachusetts. Hello, Chris's.
Hello!
Hello, good evening.
All right, it's not that funny.
Wandering Star has been a long time in the making. How long has it been?
I always get a little bit offended when people say it's been... It seemed to be very quick when we actually started getting things moving. But it's true that we have been talking about starting up a brewery since... I mean, we bought the equipment back in 2004.
Yeah.
What is that, 7 years? It sat in storage for 4 of those years. We eventually found a place to put it in 2.5 years ago. And it's actually just coming up to a year ago that we were finished building out the building that we're in and applied for our federal license, which is a whole different story in itself.
I remember personally the moment that I committed to this project, and it was the day after Black Tuesday, which we lovingly call Black Tuesday, when George Bush was reelected. We were at the Blind Tiger at an event, and you're like, we have to do this now.
Yeah, that's right. Didn't I brew a Black Tuesday stout?
Absolutely. It was the day after you brewed
Yeah, and already we had the equipment in storage in Michigan, wondering what the heck to do with it and how to put it together. I mean, it's been such, you know, it's been a long time coming, it's true. But when we started off doing this, none of us had a clue, frankly, how to brew, let alone how to brew on a commercial scale, and let alone how to build a brewery. So really, I guess when you consider how far we've kind of come personally, that's why I sometimes think to myself, gosh, we did it pretty quick.
How did you get started brewing? Were you homebrewers before you started the commercial enterprise?
Yeah, I mean, I started homebrewing back in 2001, I guess it must have been 2001, 2002. My first homebrew was a batch that I brewed for my wedding.
When you say you brewed it for your wedding, you did it so that you could withstand your wedding, or you brewed it as celebration of your wedding?
I brewed it for the party after the wedding, and here's the classic double entendre. And it was so bad that I nearly killed my in-laws. So I resolved to do better next time. It was awful, and so pretty early on, I joined the Manhattan Homebrewers Guild.
New York City Homebrewers Guild,
which is where I met Chris, who was attending his first meeting on the same evening. And then one thing led to another. Started going to Mugs meetings in Brooklyn, which is probably where I ran into you guys for the first time.
At the Malted Barley Appreciation Society.
Yeah. The Malted Barley Appreciation Society.
We're a society.
But we're a guild.
Of sorts, yeah. And it was there where I actually first realized that people could drink my beer without passing out and falling over. So really, that's where we started brewing, you know, kind of seriously and taking it seriously, making good home brews. And as Chris said, it didn't take long after that for us actually to, you know, hatch some ambitions on a bit of a grander scale.
Now, you're based in Western Massachusetts. You met here in New York. Why did you choose Western Mass?
Before I kind of got honest and started brewing, I worked for a bank here in Manhattan, and it was actually while I was sitting on a trading floor, totally and utterly bored, that I actually saw the brewery system for sale on eBay and bought that. So there I was. I mean, I was living in Manhattan, I was homebrewing here, but had a kind of weekend place up in the Berkshires, as so many of the places in the Berkshires are. I mean, I think it's about 60% weekend ownership up there. So I used to go up there every weekend, found myself going long weekends, longer weekends, decided that that's really where I wanted to end up. So when banking and I kind of split paths in 2006, and I took a significant sideways step and started assistant brewing at Chelsea Brewery here in Manhattan first, and then Greenpoint Brewing in Brooklyn. But it was always with a view to starting up a brewery in the Berkshires.
One thing I find interesting is that you guys use Valley Malting for your malt supplies. Do you get 100% of your malt from there, or do you have to order from other suppliers for your malt?
We've used Valley Malt for a couple of our specialty beers. And you've got to remember as well, we're only 5 months into the process right now. We only got licensed 5 months ago. And we have used Valley's malts in both of our Belgian beers, our Zingari Wit, which is a classic Belgian wit, but with a little lemongrass flavoring to it. And also, and I think most significantly, in our Saison. The Saison was slightly thumbing our noses at the Massachusetts ABCC, who came out with this really abortive and ill-thought-out proposal to have farmer brewers in Massachusetts use 50% of local ingredients in all of their brews. And they just didn't think about scales at all. And in fact, the one brew that we did, the Saison, that would have complied with that rule, pretty much exhausted all of the malt supply for Massachusetts for the rest of that week. So it really, is an indication of how unusable that was. We do use Valley Malt. We like to use their malt. We're talking with them right now about what to do with the barley from an acre of malting barley that we had planted earlier in the year. And they're just conducting germination tests on that now. But the nature of the game is that you still have to use a majority of commercial and kind of very homogenized commodity malt.
You had mentioned the farmer brewer license in Massachusetts. You guys have an interesting story, I know, about...
From New York State. My understanding is that there are three different kinds of licenses in Massachusetts. One of them is a farmer brewery license, and one of them is a brew pub license, and the manufacturing license. There are different things that go along with all that, from how much it costs to apply for one, and then also how much it costs to actually run one. For the farmer brewery license, that's the cheapest because it is intended to support local agriculture and support the local commerce and just the local community. The brew pub license, there are other licenses that are involved with that, to my understanding. So you have to be able to serve food and there are other things going on that. There are different tax laws, but that's another bracket. And then the production license, which doesn't allow you to serve growlers, you're a taxed hire, and basically most of the breweries in Massachusetts actually are run under a farmer brewery license, my understanding.
Yeah, I mean, we have, the biggest craft brewer in the world, Sam Adams, is a farmer brewer in Massachusetts. Its license costs at $211 a year.
And Sam Adams' volume compared to your volume is what? They're like a couple barrels more than you?
In a somewhat Orwellian fashion, recently changed the definition of a small brewer from 2 million barrels of a year to 6 million barrels a year. That's for the purpose of kind of like federal legislation.
But in all fairness, their beer is brewed in Ohio for the most part, right?
Yes, it is. I mean, and various other places as well. They're doing at least 2 million barrels a year. We will be stretched to do 2,000 barrels in
stretched
this year.
You're both farmer brewers, though.
We're both farmer brewers, and that was the thing. I mean, if we can exhaust the state's malt supply in a week, then Sam is going to, exhaust it in like 5 minutes. They're 1,000 times, at least 1,000 times bigger than us. And let's put that into perspective, that means that we are closer in scale to people who are brewing at home in their apartment once a month than we are to Sam Adams. And I think that that's one of the things about the craft brewing movement right now is that everyone talks about microbreweries and craft breweries without realizing that you're encompassing an incredible range of enterprises. of different sizes and ambitions and different laws that are going to be appropriate for all of them.
And that said, I think it's important to note our sentiment that great beer can be made on any scale. Just because we're brewing small does not mean it's better than things that are being made in large production facilities.
I noticed that we're missing one third of Wandering Star, and my guess is that that one third has something to do with the name of the brewery. Is that true?
I think the third that you're talking to is the important other English third of the triumvirate.
Hi, I'm the token American.
Excuse me. Yeah, the token American. Alex Hall, who is the Cask Ale correspondent for Ale Street News, who runs a series of real ale and cask festivals here in New York, in both Brooklyn and Manhattan, has been involved, again, from a really early stage in kind of sales and events, especially to do with promoting the real ale side of what we're doing. And real ale is a very large part of the Wandering Star kind of beer output. We are really committed to doing real ale right, which basically means, to a certain extent, having some pretty hard chats with our distributors and with outlets where we want to pour our beer about exactly how we want our beer to be served and treated in that all-important period before serving it. And we're really just trying to do cask ale as it should be done. We feel that, to a certain extent, real ale has been kind of disappearing down a cul-de-sac. It's difficult to find a good pint of real ale priced fairly, in fact, by which I mean a price that will encourage that cask being drunk in the time that it needs to be drunk for the beer still to be good. And you get into a vicious circle where, you know, you have more wastage from the cask because the cask went off because it didn't get drunk quickly enough. And therefore, ullage is the technical word. That's right. And therefore the bar owner feels compelled to actually charge a little bit more of a premium for this beer, but instead of actually solving the problem, it makes it slightly worse. And what we're trying to do is to kind of arrest that vicious circle, to price our cask beer exactly the same as our keg beer, basically, especially taking into account the kind of additional cleaning and racking and so on costs that you have with real ale, so that it can be priced fairly in bars and people can actually drink real ale the way it's meant to be treated, poured and drunk.
Well, personally, I prefer unreal ale, so you talk to the wrong person.
Speaking of beer, your beer is now, for now, only available in kegs, on draft, or on cask. What are the current beers that you have available in the New York area, or New York and Massachusetts area?
We have two Belgians, the Saison, which is the one with predominantly Massachusetts ingredients, and a wit beer, which is spiced a little bit different from a lot of wits, with lemongrass and cardamom and another Indian spice called fenugreek. That's the Zingari wit, and the Saison is the Berkshire Hills 01201, which is our zip code from up in Pittsfield.
And that's with the Saison DuPont yeast you used on that.
The Saison DuPont yeast, and it's been really fun tonight actually being able to taste our Saison next to the Saison DuPont and to compare and contrast where they're both coming from. We have then two other ales, a mild, which is a real session kind of dark beer. Looks dark like a Guinness, there's a kind of coffee, chocolate, nutty taste, with none of that acridity that you get with a Guinness, but a real session beer at 4.5%, and a Raindrop Pale Ale, which is a kind of premium pale ale, West Coast kind of bittering. We call it a hybrid because the bittering is from the US, the flavor hopping is from New Zealand, a hop called Nelson Sauvin, which is a real kind of Sauvignon Blanc character to it, and then aroma hopping with traditional UK Kent Goldings. And that's getting stronger all the time. Actually, as we get better at using our brew house and our brew house efficiency climbs, that's now 6.5%. So getting up there for a strong pale ale. And then last but not least, we have a kind of rotating lager, at which we use a Weihen Stephan classic Munich lager yeast, but we tweak our lager recipe according to what season it is. So we're just coming through a period of making Oktoberfest, We'll be making a Maibock again in the spring. And right now I'm working on developing a Dunkel recipe, a classic Munich Dunkel, which is a kind of rich, warming, dark lager for the winter months. So that's really our range that's out there right now. We do have a couple of seasonals coming out. Burt's Disqualified Imperial Stout, which is the recipe that won, or would have won, but for a technical difficulty, the New York Homebrewers Guild Homebrew Prize this past year. We brewed it as one of our first brews, limited edition batch, and it just sold like crazy. So we're going to do that again. It's an Imperial Stout, about 9%. We're really trying to get that one as strong as possible, just a rich, chocolatey, strong Imperial Stout. And then we are also making a classic Imperial English IPA. And talking Imperial there, trying to get it back to the true sense. This is the kind of beer of empire we're talking about. Back to the British Empire and the Raj and true IPAs.
So why has everyone abandoned the democratic beer? Why no democracy beer? It's all
empire.
It's all empires and royalty.
Wasn't there that little beer summit between Obama and the professor at some university or other?
Occupy Anheuser-Busch.
And I seem to remember they drank some pretty bad beer there. You know,
they did.
Democracy goes well with very, very many things, but beer seems to be something for tyrants.
That's a perfect way to end.
All right, well, Chris and Chris, thanks very much. We will catch up with Alex Hall, the third partner in Wandering Star Craft Brewery, soon, perhaps at one of his cask festivals. Thanks again.
Thanks, guys.
Thank you very much, guys.
Remember, inebriation is not a destination point. It's a perk for those with good taste.
Thanks for tuning in to Beer Here. Beer, what have you got coming up?
This Friday, November 25th, we're going to speak with Mark and Trevor from Lagunitas Brewing Company. They're going to be at the Blind Tiger from 4 to 8 p.m. holding a canned food drive.
And if you bring a can of food,
you get a beer for free.
That is definitely a good deal. That's my kind of charity event.
And we'll also be speaking with author Joshua Bernstein in an upcoming episode. He wrote a book called Brood Awakening that just came out.
How brood is it?
Kept me awake.
All right, so it looks like we have some interesting guests in the coming weeks. Thanks for tuning in, and definitely check out the blog beerhere.blogspot.com.
And happy Thanksgiving.